This show is part of the Modern Witch Podcast Network. For more shows like it, visit www.modernwitch.com.
She was burned as a witch in 1706.
She lured Hansel and Gretel into the candy house by promising them more sweets. And she told them to look in the oven. And she was about to push them in, when lo and behold, Hansel pushed the poor, defenseless witch into the oven instead, where she was burned alive, writhing in agony. They say she danced naked in the town square and enslaved a minister. Sic gorgiamus allo subjectatus nu. We gladly feast on those who would subdue us. Seek out the dark forces and join their hellish crusade.
What is that? It's a little bag made from the skin of a toad.
Does it matter? She's tampering in dark sided stuff!
Yet in our own supremely rational time, there has been a dramatic rebirth of the ancient arts of witchcraft.
You're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast with Devin Hunter.
Well, hello and welcome back to episode 3 of season 10. I am super excited. This is the Modern Witch. I am Devin Hunter. On today's show, we have the amazing Mara Starling, and Mara wrote a fantastic book that you're probably very well aware of on Welsh witchcraft. And so I brought Mara on to basically listen to me butcher Welsh words, and it was a good time. So I think you're going to enjoy this episode of the show. I got a little excited. My words became one. I have to tell you that without the people over at Patreon, this stuff wouldn't be happening. I don't know if you've seen, but we've launched 3 new shows. We've got, of course, Better Witch, which you heard Allie on the first episode of this season. We just launched Weird Movies, which is my version of going into a docu-style web series kind of thing. Specifically focused on occult horror movies. And so if you're into occult horror movies, I mean, it is spooky season, but if you're into occult horror movies, you might want to go check out Weird Movies, because the first 2 episodes are up. I'm working on the 3rd episode now. And of course, we dive in with witches. We have to talk about witches first. So very, very cool. You get to see me interview Alice Kriga, who plays an amazing witch in the new movie She Will. Alice Kriga is the Borg Queen, by the way. So if you are a fan of, anything, then you know who Alice Kriga is. You have seen Alice Kriga. It was one of the highlights of my life, being able to interview Alice Kriga. So that's there on that second episode. You should go check it out. But yeah, you can find that at modernwitch.com. We also have Witch Power Daily that just dropped today. As you're listening, there is a new podcast that we just dropped that is all of from Storm Fairy Wolf. Been trying to get him to do it for a while, and he finally was like, oh, I have this idea, and I'm like, let's make it into a show. So we have this really fun podcast out that's about helping you with your daily practice. So you can download, there's new episodes out Monday through Friday, and each season is about a month long, I think is the way it's planned, and you can download every day of your work week if you'd like, or whatever, just download it. But you can go through, and there's exercises. So there's everything from, there's fundamental things like breathing exercises to some of the deeper work, exploring shadow work and things like that. It's really cool. Storm is doing a fantastic job. It sounds awesome. So yeah, go check that out. Go to modernwitch.com and see all the stuff we're doing. And it's all free. You can just go and just be part of it. And of course, it's free because of Patreon. So if you are interested at all in supporting Modern Witch, go to Patreon, check us out, Modern Witch Official, or you can find the link by just going to modernwitch.com. I also have to tell you that tickets are now available for the official Witches Sabbat. This year we've got a really good lineup. Really good lineup. Sarita D'Est is there. Christopher Penzack's going to be there. We've got Emma Catherine's there. Just fantastic. Anyway, go check it out. Amazing people. You're going to hear all about it because I'm going to start playing commercials for it here in the next couple episodes. But definitely go and enjoy early bird registration while it lasts. It is happening the first weekend of November online. Completely online. Go check it out. It's very cool. Anyway, you're here for Mara Starling. I'm here for Mara Starling. So stay tuned when we get back after the little break here. We'll be back with Mara, and we're going to dive into the wonderful, wonderful, enchanted world of whales. Continue what you were saying. So you have two projects that you've been simmering.
Yes, I've got two projects that I'm currently working on, and it's just, I'm such an indecisive person. My friends who are into astrology are always like, it's that Gemini in you. It's just like, I'm constantly torn by two different things. So I'm working on one thing that I've already told a lot of my like patrons and such that, oh, that's the project I'm definitely going to come out with next. But then another one took my interest, and I was just like, ooh, I can't just leave it in case that interest goes away. So yeah, I'm right. Just simmering on both currently.
Yeah. And I have this theory that I believe that books are spirits. Mm-hmm. And as authors, we are the mediums that channel those spirits. And that if a book shows up to you and it wants to be written and it like starts nagging at you and you don't like sit down and go, okay, I'm going to do this. We're going to write this book together. Then it just goes to somebody else. I mean, it, because it wants to be born. It wants to be brought into the world. And if you're not going to be the medium for it, somebody else will. And I firmly believe that. So I understand the whole having a couple things on the, yeah.
Absolutely. Because I remember when I was writing my book, Welsh Witchcraft, I struggled because I felt like I'm too young. I don't know enough. I don't have enough experience. And I remember talking to my friend Christopher, who's also with Huelin, and I was saying like, oh, I just don't think anyone would care about what I have to say about the subject. And he just sat me down and he went, Mara, your voice is important. And you know what? If you don't do it, someone else is going to do it first. And then maybe your project won't be accepted because it's already been done. So if you want to put yourself out there, you need to. And you also need to lean into that sense of inspiration, that divine inspiration that's coming through right now. So go for it. And that was quite transformative. That was like, okay. That was the kick up the backside I needed.
Yeah. And you know, good. Thank you for sharing that, because I think I know a lot of people who listen to the show are writers or musicians or creators of some kind, and they get stuck at that place of, I don't think anybody wants to hear this. I don't think anybody's going to be interested in this. And what I keep trying to tell people over and over and again is that we, as you know, I'm just speaking from the vantage point of an author, we are just the current folks having this discussion. We inherited it from somebody else. We are, you know, a lot of times going through and kind of fixing things and kind of, you know, correcting things so they fit into our modern world. But we're still just inheriting something that already existed, and we're going to hopefully leave it in a better place for the next generation of folks, the new authors that are going to come up, the new priests and priestesses and people who are inspired by, you know, not just the work that came before us, but hopefully what we were able to do with that work as well. And so it's, and that's not to be like, oh, we're authors and we're amazing, but it is to say that if you take it seriously, if you take the work seriously of being a creator and you really care about stuff, you're going to have that reflection of, is anybody going to care about this? I think that's just a mark of giving a hat, you know, giving a crap. So that's my 2 cents. That's my 2 cents. So I have like this list of things that I want to like poke you about, and it's, oh, that was my chair. Hello, everybody. And it's it's kind of embarrassing a little bit. And I say this because I, as an American, am speaking to you as somebody who comes from the place that my ancestors come from. Okay. So I don't know if you know this about America. You probably do, but we're kind of obsessed with genealogy over here. And we're like in my family, we refer to ourselves as Welsh, Scottish, and German. Like that's like, yes, we're American, but when we define ourselves, those are the kind of the avenues that we define ourselves. And that is what a lot of people here do, because we are a country of immigrants. We are a country made up of people from other places. And of course, people who were here before, but that's a whole other mess of things that, you know, yeah. But being part of this country, being part of this community of pagans over here, people are often very intrigued at the idea of tapping into their ancestral heritage. That idea of tribalism in a traceable kind of way is a big deal here. So you are somebody who wrote this incredible book that is about the magic of the land where my ancestors come from. And so I, like, as I was sitting down thinking about this opportunity to talk with you, I wanted to address that, because I think that's interesting. And I think that may, I don't know if you're aware of this. I don't know if you have thought of it from that perspective as a writer, but there are a lot of American witches who have Welsh and Celtic heritage. And your book, in my way, or in my personal view as a witch, somebody who's interested in the magic and in the spirits and in the culture that existed of magic, this is like a treasure trove. And I'm not like, you know, I'm not just saying that, like, it's a really, this is a fantastic book. I want everyone to go read it again. You know, you all know the links are in the show notes, but did you think about that? Did you think about like, oh, people who are, you know, I guess genetically descended from people from Wales are going to read this and they're going to connect to their ancestral heritage in that way. Did you consider that? Or were you just coming at it from this, like, I am going to be as authentic as possible with this project and just write about what I know?
Oh, I definitely thought about it, because it was something that I suppose was at the forefront of my brain for a long time. Having friends who were from the same region as me, but were writers who wrote about the magic and the lore of Wales, they were very vocal to me that, you know, a lot of their the people that read their books were from the audience that they were reaching. We're from America. And I remember reading about the way that people have this, I suppose it's almost like a searching and a longing for where they belong in the world, the focus on, you know, what is my genealogy, where does my family come from. I'd never thought of it really much growing up, like, where do I come from? Because as far as I knew, for generations and generations, my entire family just lived in the same village. But I suppose if you live on a land that, you know, is, you know, often referred to as the stolen land, or land that does not belong to your ancestors going back too far, I can imagine that it is something that is at the forefront of your mind, is finding, well, if that's not where my ancestors going back, you know, 300-400 years are from, then where are they from? And it was something that when I first approached the book, it was more a case of, I want to embolden and empower people in the same position as me, because growing up in Wales, something that a lot of people don't really know about Wales, unless they look into the politics and such going on behind the scenes here, is that we were subdued and subjugated, and we still are in some regards a colony of another country. And so to look at it in that perspective from someone living in Wales right now, we struggle sometimes to find our identity. Our language was often called barbaric and wrong and stupid, and there's still people today trying to fight to say that the Welsh language should not exist and that it's useless. And so there's a big drive to preserve our language and our cultural identity and traditions and customs. And it was a huge transformative aspect of my path, I suppose, my path into paganism, witchcraft and magic, and finding more about myself, was accepting that I'm from this land. And why do I not know more about it? Why do I not know more about where the magic and the history and the mythology of this land comes from, and what is it and such? And I was very privileged in that I grew up in a Welsh-speaking community. So I grew up in a very small rural community in the middle of nowhere. And every single person in my village spoke Welsh as their first language. It's my first native language as well. And learning English came kind of later. And I didn't really study through the means of the English language until I was in university. And that was when I moved to England. And I didn't realize until I moved to England and met people from other regions in Wales, like bigger cities and regions that were much more anglicized, I didn't realize that not every person in Wales grew up learning about the mythology and the folklore and the magic of our culture, and learning about the importance of our language and why it's important to preserve it. And then I also met people who were from the States who also had Welsh heritage. And even they were quite shocked to hear that there are people against the Welsh language and against preserving those traditions because they see it as backwards and barbaric in some ways, because they've hold on to that colonial mindset of, well, actually, we're ruled by Great Britain, therefore we should be just proud of being English speakers and such, and Welsh is just not as useful to us around the world as the English language is. And it really used to bother me, and I used to say to people, especially within witching circles, because having attended a lot of moots and gatherings and festivals and such to do with paganism and witchcraft, you notice that a lot of people had huge interest in like Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, and there were some people who were very much into things such as Wicca, but not understanding that a lot of Wicca was inspired by a lot of Celtic mythology that stems from Wales. And when I used to talk to people about the gods and goddesses of Wales, the amount of people who didn't really have any knowledge of that, but were very knowledgeable of Greek or Roman deities, it used to really frustrate me. And so the first intention writing the book was, oh, you know, I grew up knowing a little bit about this stuff, but not to the extent I would have liked to. And I'd love to empower and embolden more people who live in Wales to look deeper into the lore and the magic of our landscape that is different and divorced from the concept of Britain and Great Britain as a whole, and the governing and rulership of England that has been on Wales for so many centuries now. And so that was the first intention, but then I knew going into it, especially because around the same time I was writing the book, I also set up a lot of social media pages for myself, where I was sharing some of the stuff that I learned along the way. And I never intended to ever grow a following. It was just, I'm going to share this information and see if anybody has any interest. And I was really shocked when people did have an interest. And what really shocked me was that I would say probably 80%. I think I've looked at my insights and my analytics. And when I did grow a somewhat big following, it was a case of, okay, where do these people come from? And in my analytics, it was a huge shock to me to find out that about 80% of my followers were from America. And so when I was writing the book, that was then something that I needed to keep in mind, was that people are not going to pick up this book having any connection to the land that I'm on right now all the time. So there will be people who'll pick it up and who live literally thousands of miles away across the ocean. And so I did kind of target some chapters on that notion. I talk a lot about the concept of hiraeth, which is the concept of a homesickness. It doesn't really have a literal English translation, hiraeth, but it's a concept of feeling this utter sickness and grief towards a home that probably does not exist anymore or never existed in the first place, and how we have this longing and emotional feeling towards our home when we're away from it. And I wrote that in regards to how I feel about hiraeth, but also knowing that probably some people have that feeling towards Wales, even having never stepped foot in Wales. And I also wrote a little bit because a lot of questions that I was getting through my social media at that point were people coming to me going, is it a closed practice? Like, I have Welsh ancestry, but I've never stepped foot in Wales. Am I allowed to touch upon that? And so I was aware of it, but I did not realize just how to what extent it was until the book came out. And I started getting so many messages from people who were just so thankful that I was able to help them in some small way to connect to their ancestral heritage and to connect to things that help them feel like they had a place that they belonged in the world. And that just made me feel so intensely grateful that I was any small part of their journey. So I think it's something that I still keep in mind nowadays if I ever do anything. But I'm glad that I wrote the book as I did, because though I don't touch on it enough in the book, I don't think, I tried to keep it true to my experience growing up in Wales as a Welsh witch. And I think even with not having tailored it too much towards an audience that was outside of this land, I think it still touched a few people, which I hope it did anyway. I hope it inspired and touched a few people who do have a connection in some way, or who don't, maybe who just have an affinity towards these things. But yeah, it was something that was in the kind of back ends of my brain. But then as I continued writing, it came to the forefront when people started reaching out.
I love that. And I could tell, I as I was going through, I very much felt that you were at least aware that people like me existed. and I liked that. I felt seen. So there you go. So I'm just telling you, it came through in the book, and I thought it. Yeah. Anyway, so with that, I imagine having. I don't know. I also don't like, oh, look at the foreigner, poke, poke, poke. Like, I don't want to do that too much, but I'm, it, you know, it is a point of curiosity, because I think so many of us are looking for home, as you say, right? They're looking, at least this a place that they belong. I think we are all looking for a place where we belong. And I think that a lot of witches are solitary practitioners, and they don't necessarily belong to a group where there's a shared practice or a shared, you know, kind of spiritual heritage. And so it's important for a lot of us, as we're looking for that place of where do I belong, to be able to look into the past and identify ourselves, at least in some capacity, where could I belong? Where did my ancestors come from? Because I do think, as an American, like, I love this country. I do. It drives me up a freaking wall because there's a lot of dumb shit that happens. But I do love my country. I, of course, wish things will change, and I hope things will change for the better in some ways. But I do, and I have always been intimately aware that we don't really necessarily belong here. And at least not from that same place as, you know, where my ancestors belonged in Wales. And that was, and I got this chance to sit down with a pipe carrier for Red Cloud. So we're talking to the First Nations people over here, and we were talking about ancestry. And he was like, you know, the thing that I think a lot of you guys forget, essentially breaks down to, we still remember what it's like to be free and be wild. That was bred out of you because your people were conquered at one point. Your people, you know, this is what happened. And, you know, you became part of the machine and then spit out. And that was never a perspective that I had ever heard. And thinking of it from that way, I started to really want to understand my genetic heritage and my ancestral heritage a little bit more. And that's something that, you know, a lot of us don't really have access to. Like, I only know this stuff because I did a DNA test, but otherwise we can only trace, you know, the family back a couple generations, you know, and we can say, oh, well, you know, the surname connects to this thing over here and it could be this thing over there, but you really don't know because there was so much marriage and there were so many people who came over here and their names were just flipped and changed. And, you know, so there's a lot of stuff that happened in the process where you just, your family loses its identity. And all you have are those small communities that you grow up in where, you know, the same culture or the same group of people settled. And so you know, those things are preserved, or you do a DNA test, you know, and that's pretty much all we can do over here. So it's really cool to have this glimpse into this particular set of magic, because it's actually, a lot of people have Welsh heritage over here. At least a lot of white people. A lot of us have Welsh heritage. And so I love this. I ate it up. Again, people ever go buy it. It's a fantastic book. So I want to talk to you about where my ancestors come from, because I pulled up my DNA test, and I'm going to ask you some questions about some of the areas in Wales and what perhaps they might be known for. Are you down?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'd love that.
All right. Okay. So my biggest likelihood of percentage comes from, I want to say Merseyside. Does that, did I say that right?
Is it Merseyside? Yes.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yep. And yeah, so that whole area. So I guess Liverpool is kind of in that space. Formby, Halewood, Bootle. So what's going on over in Merseyside with magic in Wales?
Oh gosh. So much. So Merseyside is actually just over the border now. So we'd class it technically as England. But at one point, so to give a little bit of context for people who might not know, because I have been quizzed on this a few times, and I hope I'm not just preaching something that most people already know, but because I've been quizzed on it a few times, I thought I'd bring it up. But there's a huge distinction between the British Isles. So when we talk about like Britain, Wales, England, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, depending on who you ask, we have the British Isles, which classes, you know, Scotland, England, Wales, and Ireland as a whole, as part of the British Isles. And then inside that, we have the United Kingdom of Great Britain, Northern Ireland, which is England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland all together as a United Kingdom. And then within that, we have Great Britain, which is Wales, England, and Scotland. And Wales has been shifted into this tiny little corner in the West. And that happened many, many hundreds of years ago. But originally, before that, before Wales was kind of shifted into this little corner, all of what we now call Great Britain, so that's the area that covers Wales, England, and Scotland, was a Brythonic culture. And those are the ancestors of the modern Welsh, the Brythonic people, the native British people who lived on these isles long before the Anglo-Saxons and the Norse and all such came and invaded and then, of course, settled in what is now England. So when what would become the English came and settled in Great Britain, they pushed the Welsh to the very western corners. And so nowadays, there are many areas that are technically England and English, but in reality have a Brythonic and Celtic past, especially when you look at the north of England and the borderlands of what is now bordering Wales. So Merseyside would have been at one point very, very much Celtic. But even today, even within a concept of like Englishness, because as I was saying, in some regards, you could still consider Wales a colony of England because we're still ruled by Westminster, which is the English government. And we're still living in the shadow of things that were done to our culture to try and suppress it for so many years. But Liverpool is this strange mixing pot, this area that it has so many people from all over the place. So we have like Irish influence in Liverpool today, as well as Welsh and English. So it's this big mixing pot, and it's somewhere that I actually visit quite a lot because I now technically also live across the border. I moved to a place which in Wales we call Gaer, but in England they call Chester. And Chester is just over the border, literally just over the border from what is officially Wales. So it's England, but we have such Welsh influence here. And Chester's literally just below Merseyside. It's just below Merseyside on the map, if you were to look it up. And so I spend a lot of time in Merseyside and Liverpool, and it's such a beautiful area. And I will say that I was there a few weeks ago now. I don't know if it was it last week, either last week or the week before. And I was exploring this beautiful graveyard, the cemetery, which dates back to the 19th century. But in the same spot where that cemetery is a natural spring that runs through the place. And I gathered some water from the spring, communicating with the spirits of the area. And when I went home, I looked up the history of that spring, and I was just blown away. I don't know why I'm always just so blown away by how much history these areas have. But that natural spring was discovered in the 1700s by workmen, because in that area it used to be a quarry, and it became this infamous magical healing well where people said that it could heal all sorts of things from gout to migraines. And there was belief as well that there were qualities that were not so healing in nature. There was also baneful qualities to this water, especially when the cemetery was established. When the cemetery was established in that area, it was then said that the malicious spirits that were laid to rest there would send their spirit into the waters of the well, and anyone who gathered the water from the well and went and boiled it in their kitchen, it would boil black with the evil and wicked spirits that lived there. And it was just this intense history of this beautiful well in St. James Cemetery, and it just drew me into understanding just how rich a lot of these folkloric aspects of these places are, even if you are literally only looking at it from the last 300-400 years or so. There's just so much going on there. But in Merseyside in general, I think there's a lot of folklore, especially surrounding Liverpool and such. And it's an area that is very rich in cultural history because of the mixing pot that it has become. It was a place that was very industrial and very focused on the working class. So though it's a city, it's not very focused on the upper classes. It's very working class in nature. And it's just, I absolutely love it there. I don't know enough about the magical history of Liverpool and Merseyside or the ancient history, the when it was a Brythonic area. But I do know that there are a lot of ancient monuments and such around that area that are absolutely breathtaking. So it is a place that has a lot of history. So it's a very wonderful place to come from, I think. And if you ever get the chance to visit, if you haven't already, I very much recommend it.
Oh, it's on the bucket list is a tour of all of, I guess, Great Britain. I don't know. That was a trip for me. I'm like, really? I didn't understand that. And I'm looking at a map here, and yeah, it's so all of this is fascinating to me. So you're doing a fantastic job. Okay. So are we talking like, so what about like Manchester? Right? Is that, would that be part of Wales? Would you consider that to be Welsh?
So not today, no. Manchester technically a part of England. It's another place that I spend a lot of my time, actually. I went to university in Manchester, and it's somewhere that I absolutely adore. But Manchester technically is across the border in England nowadays. There's a lot of tales of things like black dogs from over there. It's a really interesting place.
I had heard black dogs. So... are we, so we should be heading more north. Is that what I'm kind of getting?
More so to the west. So more if you so look at west. A map of Great Britain as a whole, you've got England to the kind of, England takes up a lot of room nowadays.
Yes.
But Wales is the area. It looks, we always say it looks like an old lady reaching her hand out to hold a stick. So it's to the west. It's further. So Scotland is up right at the north, and then lower down is Wales. And it's an area that kind of looks like it's jutting out twice. And there's a little head on it. So a little island at the top. And that's where I'm from originally, the little island at the top called Ynysmon, the Isle of Anglesey. So Wales is to the west and nowadays is rallied to that area. But of course, like I said, once upon a time, all of what we now call Wales, England and Scotland would have been Brythonic land, which to some people I think might be a shock because Scotland nowadays is known as a Gaelic place because they have the Gaelic language up there. But the Gaelic language in Scotland originates from Ireland because the Scots clan from Ireland went and invaded what is now Scotland, which is why we call it Scotland, because it was the land of the Scots after they invaded. And before that, prior to that, Scotland was Brythonic, so shared the same ancestors as the Welsh. And that's why there's still a lot of places in Scotland that have very Welsh names. But when you stick to the north of what is now England, places like Liverpool, Merseyside, Manchester, especially as well in Northumbria and Cumbria, you still see a lot of Welsh influence in the place names and in the folklore specifically and in the magic that exists there. You still see that intense Welsh, I guess, vibe, because even though I've moved now to, I'm going to share that I get a lot of flack sometimes for living in what is now England and being so full of pride for being Welsh, because I still get it over, especially on TikTok for some reason. I get a lot of people commenting on my videos saying, how can you speak about Wales so with such pride and like power when you are currently living in England? You moved to England, so it must not be that great. And it's like, I moved literally a little bit over the border. And this area is still so rich in folklore. And once upon a time, it would have been what we now call Wales. And to give you a little bit of context as well into the Welsh specifically, the word that we use to describe ourselves in the Welsh language is Cymru. And Cymru is the name of the country as well. And Wales is the anglicized term for it. And the word Welsh etymologically comes from the word foreigner. So when the invading forces came to take this land for themselves and shoved the Brythonic people into the west, they called us Walia, which means foreigner, which is quite ironic considering they were the foreigners on the land at that point. But the name kind of stuck, and that's why we call ourselves the Welsh, because it kind of stuck from that term Walia. But our native term is Cymru and Cymraeg, which means countrymen. So it's an interesting juxtaposition, I think, that our word for ourselves is Cymru, which means countrymen. And the, I suppose if you're going to use that word, foreign word that was used to describe us, which stuck, Walia, means foreigner. And I think that says a lot about how those people who came to this land, and that was many, many hundreds, if not thousands of years ago now. So that's not coming from a bitter place of, oh, we were invaded. It's more a case of that's the history and the context there. And that's why our language was suppressed and such, because it was the language of the country folk, the language of the people to the west of the island, which was used by, you know, the hicks in the country who couldn't go to school, couldn't afford to go to school and such. And so our language was suppressed to the point where children used to get punished with physical harm if they spoke it in schools and such. And that's why I think it's so important to preserve the culture, preserve the language, and preserve our ways as well, because I don't want them to ever die out.
Hey everyone, thanks for downloading this episode of the Modern Witch Podcast. I just want to say thank you so much to my Patreon subscribers, to the people who are buying merch. Everyone involved in that type of monetary exchange is helping Modern Witch thrive right now. You're helping us produce new shows. You're covering the cost of making new shows and bringing them on so that we can highlight new voices in the community. You are making sure that there are people who otherwise wouldn't have a platform are getting a platform, and it's all just really freaking cool. So if you aren't already part of the Patreon, if you aren't already getting one of our subscription boxes where you can get crystals and plants and all kinds of cool things delivered to you every month, you totally should go to modernwitch.com and find out more about that. And again, we have really great merch. I mean, some really fantastic merch. And it's not just stuff that has like our logo on it. I mean, sure, that exists and you'll look fabulous in it. But there's also plus size dresses. There are all kinds of really beautiful occult and witchy designs, some fun designs for Halloween. It's pretty loaded. So go over to modernwitch.com. There are so many ways that you can support us. And don't forget, a lot of our hosts on the network also have their own Patreons, and they also have their own websites. So make sure that you also click on their links on our website and go check them out as well. Thank you so much for downloading. Thank you so much for your support. And don't forget to like and subscribe on whatever podcasting platform you grabbed your podcast from. Make sure that you give us 5 stars, please. That really does help. It helps other people know that we are a high quality show, and that we are producing good content that they might want to listen to as well. So hit that 5 stars, hit that subscribe button, and we will be in your ears as often as we possibly can. All right, back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I've found the correct place on the map, and now I am ready to go. I am loaded. We are ready to go. Okay, Dulas. Am I saying that right? Dulas?
Dulas, how is that spelled?
D-U-L-A-S.
Oh gosh, okay. Yes, you are saying it right if you read it in, I suppose, if you're reading it as a person who speaks English as their predominant language. But Dulas is how we say it in the Welsh language. So Dulas. And Dulas is in Anglesey. So it's from Ynys Môn, where I'm originally from. So the Ynys Môn, Anglesey, is an island right at the north of Wales. And Ynys Môn is what we call it in our native language. Môn is a name that was given to it by the Romans, coming from Mona when they came to this landscape. And then in English, we call it Anglesey. But Dulas specifically is a place that is in the... I think, is it in the northeast, right up the northeast of the island? And it's, I guess, it's an area that's the other side of the island to where I grew up. But Anglesey itself is absolutely littered with folklore. So I can definitely tell you a little bit about Dulas and the history of specifically Anglesey and Ynys Môn. So it's a place that was the last stronghold of the Druids of Britain. So the ancient Druids, when they existed on these lands, it was said, according to Roman academics, because the Druids never wrote anything down, so we don't know anything firsthand from them, what they did. but according to Roman historians, the Druids had a center of training, a center of spiritual worship and training where they trained people to become Druids. And that was on the Isle of Anglesey, on Ynys Môn, on the island of Mona, they would say. And it was said that anyone who wanted to become a Druid throughout not just Britain, but throughout even some parts of Northern Europe, so even some parts of what is now France and Belgium, all the way through to like Spain and such, if they were training to be a Druid, they would be sent to Mona to train under the Druids' guidance, and they would become spiritual leaders. So the Druids were almost like a mixture between spiritual leaders and politicians and philosophers and all these different things. They were also leaders of communities. They would often make decisions. And so all of that druidic wisdom and magic is very much associated with Ynys Môn, the Isle of Anglesey, where Dilas is located, because that was their final stronghold. So when the Romans, we talk about the Romans coming to Britain, but it kind of happened more than twice, but twice is the way I always refer to it as with people when we're talking about a very abridged version of the history of this place. The Romans first came before they were Christianized, when they were what we would now say is pagan, they refer to the ancient Roman religion. And so they brought their gods over to Britain with them. And in, during that period, it was more or less, to say it in kind of a neat manner, it was more or less a mixing pot of the Roman and Celtic cultures. It wasn't so much of a clash. It was just, they were here. Some Celtic people joined the Roman army. And we see this in the fact that we have Roman remains. So I live in Chester, which is a Roman, it was at first a Roman fort. The name Chester comes from Cestria, which is a military fort, I think. And we have a lot of Roman things here. And so when the Romans came over to Britain as pagan Romans, as we would say now, they brought their gods over, and the gods of the Romans and the gods of the native Brythonic people kind of mixed. And we see shrines to Celtic gods such as Taranis, who was a god associated with weather and thunder and such. We see shrines to the god Taranis built in Roman style, so within the Roman context. So that tells us that these shrines were built for Roman soldiers who probably had Celtic ancestry, and so they didn't worship the same gods as the rest of the Roman soldiers. They worshipped the gods of the Celts. There's also shrines in other places across Europe to gods such as Maponos, who is a Celtic god. We have a cognate within Welsh mythology called Mapon, and the Romans also saw Maponos as a kind of cognate of, I think it was Jupiter. Don't get me wrong on that. Maponos was seen as equated to Apollo. So Apollo, the Roman god, they were seen as cognate with each other. And so you see these shrines where they're seen as Maponos, also Apollo. So that was a way that the Romans kind of understood the gods of the region they were in. They would create these cognates, like, oh, okay, well, not so much cognates in name, but cognate in their attributes and the things that they did. And so they would go, okay, I see your god Maponos, and I think that's quite similar to our god Apollo. So we're going to put on the shrine Maponos, Apollo. And so there was this mixing pot going on. But then when the Romans became Christianized, it was very much the intention that everyone has to be Christian within the Roman Empire. Every single person has to be Christian. And so they came and they converted people in what is now Wales and Great Britain into Christians. And they saw the Druids as people who were a bit of a threat to their empire, a bit of a threat to their Christian stronghold. And so they eradicated the Druids entirely. They set out on a mission to eradicate the Druids and take over their lands so that they could convert people to Christianity. Because if they didn't have their spiritual leaders, well, it wasn't that hard to turn them into Christians. And so Ynys Môn, Anglesey, where Dilas is located, was the final stronghold of the Druids. It was the last place that they lived before they were completely massacred and turned into Christians. And there are stories, there are accounts from Roman historians, such as, I think it's Tacitus or Tacitus, there are accounts of the Roman armies coming up the, what is the Menai Straits, which is the strait of water that separates the Isle of Anglesey from the mainland of Wales. the Roman armies coming up in their boats. And as they saw the island come into sight, they saw the Druids, which were a mixture of people in black and white robes, concocting all sorts of curses and spells and throwing these curses at the Roman army, as well as women dressed in black who were, or even sometimes baring their breasts and such, and throwing curses. So it was a case of the Druids did not go without a fight. They fought to the very end. And there are some aspects of what the Druids did that I find questionable, because at the end of the day, history is written by the victors. Can we really believe everything the Romans who were set out to eradicate them said about them? And so there are some things, such as they said that Anglesey was covered in the bloody ruins of like altars where sacrificial ritualistic practices took place. There's no evidence for those altars, but they were destroyed apparently. But on top of these altars, which were covered in blood from sacrifices, the Druids also had sacred groves, which we know were destroyed as well. But we also have a history that goes beyond the Druids, back into history prior to the Celts even. And that is the ancient monuments that sit around Anglesey. Anglesey has a number of ancient monuments, which are absolutely stunning and beautiful, and just as valuable to the history of the British Isles as places like Stonehenge. Stonehenge gets a lot of media attention, but in reality, we have sacred sites like that, ancient monuments made of stone, standing stones and chambered tombs and stone circles, which go back thousands upon thousands of years. And Anglesey has them in the dozens. So you cannot throw a stone in Anglesey without coming across a standing stone or a circle of stone. So in the area that some of your ancestors would have come from, there probably is quite a lot of things around there. I know that Dillas is near places such as Nepo and such, so it's up there, and Mynydd Eilian. So it definitely has a few monuments around that area that go back even prior to the Druids. So it's a place with such rich history and such rich folklore even today. I know that close to that area, there is a sacred well associated with healing again, similar to the one I talked about in Liverpool, where people believed had healing properties as well as divinatory properties. So it's an area that's absolutely imbued with magic. And because it's somewhere that's so close to where I grew up, I think I'm going to touch upon what you said earlier, which is that, you know, a lot of people in America, I suppose, grow up disconnected from the culture of their ancestors. And though I grew up in an area that was very much affected by the colonialist ideas of the English is the most important aspect of our culture and the Welsh aspects are kind of less important, though I grew up in the shadow of that, it was unlikely that we would forget that we were a nation filled with magic and wildness, because we had these ancient monuments of the peoples who lived here thousands of years ago still standing. We had just a few minutes down the road from my house, there was a monument called Barclotydd y Gawres, which is this ancient tomb. Barclotydd y Gawres means the giantess's apronful, and the folklore is that these huge standing stones carved with Celtic symbols that sit within the underground temple were things that were being carried in a giant's apron, and she tripped and fell, and that's what caused the monument to come to be. And Barclotydd y Gawres is basically a hollow hill. It's a hill that is hollow on the inside and has this beautiful chamber inside made of stone. And we grew up playing in these places, playing in these areas which we locally called places that were home to the fairies, home to the Tylwyth Teg, the native fairies of our land. And so it was hard to kind of disassociate with the idea that we once had a wild aspect to ourselves, because it was right there. It was right there in front of us on our doorsteps. We could run down to the beach and you would see these standing stones, chambered tombs, and all these wonderful things that the ancient inhabitants of this landscape did, and how they lived and how they breathed their life. And so, yes, it's an area that I think I'm quite surprised that you brought up, because it's not very often I hear people saying that they're from Anglesey. So that's amazing.
Well, somebody somewhere back in my, apparently on both sides of my family, yes, that was a thing. So, and I don't know what I inherited from them, but I do hear from my friends in the United Kingdom that it's my stubbornness. So I'm just going to ride with that, and I'm here for it. All right, everybody, we'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned. Out in 3, 2, 1. Okay. Do you have a copy of your book, Andy?
I do.
Okay. You are going to hopefully love this, but and I think this will be very fun, and I think that the listeners will absolutely adore it. I want to read Welsh spells from your book because I'm going to butcher them, because of course I have American English over here, like they will. And then I want you to correct give us the correct way to pronounce them.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So I was thinking starting on page 163 with the protection charm.
Okay. I know that one off my heart as well.
Okay. I didn't mean one of those things where it was like, hey, how do you say this thing? You know what I mean? And then you're like, I don't know what the fuck I wrote. So, cause I do that. So I'm like, I wrote a spell. That's cause the other thing too, what people don't get is like, what we write about isn't necessarily what we do. We have to translate what we do so it makes sense for other people and that they can accomplish the same thing, you know? So it's just difficult sometimes to remember scripts, I think. That's all. Oh, so, okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Let's do it. Okay. And back in 3, 2, 1. And welcome back to the Modern Witch Podcast. I'm your host, Devin Hunter. I am joined by the amazing Mara Starling. And we're going to have some fun. We are going to have an experience that all of you at home are going to have if you are not a Welsh speaker, which is you are going to end up reading Welsh spells. And if you're like me, it's going to be an experience. So I thought while we had her with us, we would try to read some spells in Welsh. And then hopefully you might be able to correct the pronunciation, because I'm literally, this is unrehearsed. I've opened the book, I picked a page, and we're going to go for it. So I have no idea what's going to happen, folks. I read these things in my mind. I never read them out loud. So the first time for everyone. Okay. Okay. So starting on page 163, there is a protection charm. And okay, here we go. No judgment, folks. No judgment. Oh goodness. Okay. Pan Godwir Borio in Ginta in Nod Bino in Bena in Nod Kerig Nod Patrig in Nod e Gear Gear. Hold on, I'm trying again. In Nod e Gear Gwyn Bendigedig. Okay, all right, two more lines, guys. Hold on with me. In Nod Owain Ben Ulman Lu Ag in Nessa in Nod Isu. Okay, how bad was that on a scale of 1 to 10? Don't lie.
Oh gosh, it was great.
Okay, so how would we actually say that?
Well, I will say before I read it, the entire thing, that you did something that really shocked me, which is you stumbled initially on Gwr Gwyn, which is the Gwr, that bit down there. And that really shocks me that when you stumbled, you went back and tried to do it again and you did it perfectly, the Gwyn Bendigedig. You did that perfectly. And usually the WY stumbles people. So I was really like, oh wow, you got that one perfectly. So yeah. But
channeling my ancestors. Channeling my ancestors.
But the whole charm in its wholeness is Pan Godwir Bore yn Gynta yn nawdd beino yn benna yn nawdd cerig nawdd patrig yn nawdd y gŵr gwyn bendigedig yn nawdd owain ben himan hu ag yn nesa yn nawdd Iesu. So that's the whole thing in its entirety.
That's so much prettier than what I said. I'm just going to do it. Okay, let's try another one. So page 170, is a spell for fair weather. Okay. Boar dindod brinhan tegwich a con our aweer gok prinhan ooh tegwich a con a weir loss a deem that's gonna mwai ola hall disglare hall disglare tekvich a con. How'd I do?
Marvelous.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
But. Oh gosh, I absolutely love that you read that word as tegwitch. That sounds very fun.
Okay, all right. Rip the bandaid off. All right. So how would we actually say that in Welsh?
So this spell actually has quite a rhythmic, poetic quality to it. So it has a lot of rhyme. So it's Buar drindod prynhawn, tegwch a cawn. Awyr goch prynhawn, tegwch a cawn. Awyr las a ddim mwy o law. Hael ddisglair, tegwch a cawn.
That sounds so much sexier than I mean, I think Welsh really is a gorgeous language when I've heard it. And of course, I'm a part of the fairy tradition of witchcraft over here, which has a lot of Welsh stuff. Because there were a few practitioners who were from Wales and they brought things over. So there's like these influences that can only come from Welsh. And there are things that are in Welsh that made it into books that were, you know, passed around that were not at all actually Welsh. And so we found out because we got some people in the tradition who were native Welsh speakers, and they were going through, they're like, oh no, this literally means translate into Welsh. Like this does, that's what this translates to. So, you know, just fun stuff like that. So that was like a reverie, but I think it's a sexy language. So maybe instead of going with like spells, maybe we'll try some herb names. How about that?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So, okay. This should be fun. Okay. So agrimony.
Yes.
Okay. And everybody, if you're following along, that's page 182. Let's try this again. E tweer.
The Y is actually yes. An noise in Welsh. So it's but this is where it gets complicated. When okay. It's after an R, it doesn't. Noise, so it's a trio.
So like, oh okay, a tray. So it's kind of like, well, I don't want to say a tray you because now I'm going into the never ending story, but I like that. Okay so let me see if I can find an example of that again. Well how about for broom?
Ooh, broom.
This looks easy. I'm gonna totally, it's not gonna be easy though because I'm saying that. How about banal?
That was actually quite good. So it's, yeah, that was pretty much it, really. So it's banatle.
Banatle. We just, okay.
Or banatle, we'd say as well. Banatle.
Okay. Find another one here and lose my tongue. This looks, okay. Let's try that. Yarrow. What is it? Mildale?
So it's meal dial.
Meal dial. Oh, okay. So that
leaves.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay. Okay. All right. One more. This is sage. Gidwad.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's gatewat, which means keeper or guardian, which I love.
Oh, I do love that. Okay, all right. I'm going to stop butchering your language. Thank you so much for humoring me on that. I just know that, you know, in any of these situations, you get a book of spells and it's in a different language, especially if you're an American, because we're really bad with this stuff. And so it's quite fun to stumble through. So thank you for humoring me and everyone at home. Greatly appreciate it.
It was absolutely fine.
before we start to wrap it up and I let you go, I did want to ask, what was it? I always want to know, like, from just a psychic perspective, as a witch, you know, you've traveled, you've been around, you understand the difference of psychic energy in one location from another and so on and so forth. What would you say would be a good definition for the psychic feeling and energy of Wales that defines it, that gives it its that makes it unique? What is spiritually, I mean, I think spiritually we can get that, but psychically, what do you feel that makes Wales and the energy of that location so different and unique?
That's a lovely question. And I think from my perspective, I would focus quite entirely on where I grew up, which is Aberfraw, which is a little village on the southwest of Anglesey, Ynys Môn. And Aberfraw is such a specifically, to me, magical place because of its ancestral significance. My family have lived there for hundreds of years now. And it's just something that I always try and explain to people, the feeling I get from home. And I'm always wondering, is this just, you know, a bit of nostalgia that's coming into my feelings towards this place or not? But I have had other people visit there and say that they've experienced exactly the same thing. People from England and even from America who have come to visit me in my home place and tell me that no, they feel exactly the same in that landscape. And the words that, because obviously the feelings we get, the psychic feelings, the energetic feelings that we sense from the landscape, it's not always something that we can put to words perfectly. But if I had to, the words that I always think of when I think of home and I think of the landscape that I was raised in are ancient, powerful, and deeply connective in nature. So there's this ancient feeling to the place. You know, this is a place that people have walked upon for thousands upon thousands of years and settled in as well for thousands upon thousands of years. You can see the remnants of it in the landscape, in those chamber tombs, those circles of stone. When I walk down to the cliffs at the beach, because it was on the coast, when I walk down to the beach, there's the remains of an Iron Age cairn, an Iron Age kind of burial mound where people used to come and bury their ancestors or place the remains of their ancestors, and a place where people used to come and connect to their ancestors' wisdom and such. And you can feel that. You can feel this is a place that people have trod upon for thousands upon thousands of years. But going beyond the human aspects of it, what it means to be human in that area, even the landscape itself is ancient in feel, because when you look around, the stone there, the stones are black and volcanic, and the coastal paths, the cliffs and such, as you look out to the sea, they are so eroded because the waves have been lapping in for so many years. And you can tell that at one point, the sea came much closer to the village than it does today, because you can see the remnants of where the sea probably came up to, and that's all visible to the human eye. But energetically, it's this spiraling feeling of being completely immersed in a landscape that was once deeply important to the people who lived there. Aberfraw is a landscape specifically that is mentioned in medieval manuscripts and ancient texts as being the capital of Wales, the capital of the princes of Wales. And so there is this regal feeling to it, but not in an imperialistic or colonial sense, but in just this sense of sovereignty that is found and embedded into the land, this sense of cultural identity. And it's just the feeling I get whenever I'm in Wales that differs from now that I live in England, even though I just live across the border. But the feeling I get is that you're much more connected to the natural world in a deeper sense. It's just part of your everyday life. If I wanted to go catch the bus, for example, or catch the train is a better example. If I ever wanted to catch the train, I couldn't just, you know, get on a bus that goes through a city center. I had to walk across 3 miles worth of sand dunes next to the sea, cross over a river or two, walk through so many fields, through the herbs and such. So there's this connection to nature that I just don't get anywhere else. This feeling that you're not separate from nature. You know, it's not this concrete area here and the woods are out there somewhere in the far corners of the countryside. You're completely immersed in the nature all the time. And there's just this old feeling to it all. Everything feels like it's just been there for thousands upon thousands of years. Even the new things, even things that you know logically are new. So for example, we have two versions of druids that exist in Wales, the cultural druids and the pagan druids. The cultural druids can be Christian, they can be anything they want, they're not always pagan. And the cultural druids run our biggest cultural festival, which has been going on since I think the 1800s now, called the Eisteddfod. And the Eisteddfod is a celebration of Welsh culture, Welsh poetry, Welsh art. And they set up for the Eisteddfod a circle of stone. They set up a circle of stone called a Gorsedd circle. And when you see these goddess-head circles, they look like, say, the Callanish stones that are up in Scotland or Stonehenge for somebody who might be listening who's not used to seeing circles of stone and such. And I remember going onto Facebook when I was about 14, 15, and somebody had posted a picture of a goddess-head circle and said, oh, I'm in Wales, I'm visiting, it was an American friend of mine, I'm in Wales and I'm on holiday, I'm on vacation, and I'm really loving this place because I just walked through a park in Cardiff and I came across an ancient stone circle, and it took all that was in me not to turn around and correct them and say, actually, that's not an ancient stone circle, that's a stone circle that was probably built in the 1970s for an Eisteddfod. But even those places, the goddess-head circles, they're so embedded into what our cultural identity is that those places feel old and powerful and magical, like they're connected to something much bigger and stronger than we are. I always feel like my breath is taken away when I go to these places, no matter how modern they are, like the goddess-head circles, or if they're ancient, such as Barclodau de Gaures or Bryn Cyhyddu, which are ancient monuments that sit on the island. It always just takes my breath away, and there's this stillness, this calm, as if, I think if I had to describe it in as few words as possible to someone, what does Wales feel like? It feels like sitting with a very elderly person and having a conversation with them. It feels like sitting with your great-great-grandmother who has seen it all, but who is so calm, so still, and you know is at that place in life where they just are content with everything, because there's this still calm vibe that just emanates from them. And that's the feeling I get, because every time I go home, I go visit home from England now, I always feel just this sigh of relief, like I'm going into my grandmother's house and she's given me a little butterscotch candy, sat me down on her sofa in front of the fire, and now she's just going to tell me a bunch of stories from when she was younger. And that's how I feel every time I go visit the landscape that I grew up in. So yeah, I suppose that's how I would describe the energy of Wales.
I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. That was perfect. That's exactly the type of answer a psychic person would give. That's perfect. Okay, so if people wanted to find you online, and of course, all of the links and stuff are in the show notes below, everybody, so just find where you've been listening to it, but where would you send them?
So I currently have pretty much everything going, but my main resources, I always say to people, like, I kind of train my content or cultivate my content to be different each platform I post on. So TikTok is a place that I'm currently on that I probably have the most followers, which is quite insane considering I consider myself not quite the TikTok person. On TikTok, I'm very theatrical. I'm very all over the place. I jump around ancient monuments and I talk about the folklore of Wales in a very theatrical, campy way, manner, I suppose. Then on YouTube, I post YouTube videos which go into the depths of Welsh folklore, mythology, magic, witchcraft. So YouTube is less theatrical and less campy, and instead I just sit down and talk to a camera about the things that I know about mythology, magic, folklore, and witchcraft in general. I also have a Patreon. Patreon is somewhere that I'm very proud of because I just love the little community that has built up from my Patreon. They have a Discord server and a Facebook group that they can talk to other people who are interested in Welsh magic and lore with. I post not as regular as I would like at the minute, but I try and post regular content there. Especially I do very in-depth video lessons and classes each month for my patrons, as well as live streams which delve into an aspect of Welsh legend and lore. And then I'm also on Instagram, and there I just like to post pretty pictures of the things that I do. So if anybody wants to reach out to me, those are the kind of main platforms that I absolutely love to post to as often as I can, as much as I can, because I love talking about the just magic of the landscape that I grew up in. And if anybody ever has any interest in that, I'm always deeply grateful that they're willing to look at my content.
Amen to that. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and I hope that you have a fantastic rest of your day.
You too. Thank you so much for having me. It's been absolutely lovely.
All right, everybody, we'll be right back after this.
See, I told you it was going to be a fun episode. How awesome was it? That was actually kind of ridiculous on my part. I felt so stupid just going through her book and being like, I'm going to completely mess up your language. she was game, which was fun, and I appreciated that. I also have to tell you that Mara is now one of the bloggers over at modernwitch.com. So if you are interested in more Mara, you should just go to modernwitch.com, where you're going to find more Mara, because we are like that. All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Next week, we have another really good interview. So, you know, come back. I'm not going to tell you who it is, because... Yes, I do know. I do know who it is. I promise I know, but I'm not going to tell you because I'm just like that. Anyway, lots of love. I will see you next week. We will have a good time. Thank you for the 5 stars. Thank you for subscribing. You rock. You are amazing. And I hope that everything you do is fantastic.
There are forces at work here. Dark, incomprehensible forces.
Satyrs Incorporated.